So, 2 p.m. Have Alderman Butcher, Alderman Transier. Oh my god, I can't believe I'm drawing blanks on names.
I'm Steve.
Steve?
Yeah.
Steve, I'm scared.
It's okay.
I
loved it.
It's been one of those days.
We're all here.
We're all here.
Marlis, you know, you take care of everything.
I got it covered.
Goodness. Any citizens? No. Minutes for correction from September 18th. All right. So take those as approved. New business, admin 2019-54, monthly budget report for September 2019.
Yeah, a few things to highlight. One, we always talk about sales tax. That September column, I believe that reflects June consumer purchases, basically right in line with what we expected. I think it was like $200 off. The one that's not on the chart, which you'll see next month, was significantly higher than what we expected historically, like to the tune of $10,000, which is pretty good variance. So that's good news. And then on the year, for the first couple months, we are above budget. Also on the revenue side, if you flip down to page... going to be PDF page 24 and it's budget report page 11. You've got some sizable deposits in the vehicle and equipment revenue budget for police capital, public works capital, and then much further down there's a library deposit that's also large. That's the Raintree Village money coming in, so we approved that. Oh, back in May, they closed on the bonds. The mayor announced meetings ago, so they actually cut those checks and gave those to us, which is a rare occurrence nowadays. So, first time in a few years. One of a handful in a decade that's occurred. Used to happen pretty much every week during the boom years. But those are impact fees. So I know that we've talked about Public Works spending those on snowplows. And in police, spending those on squads. So there will be some plans forthcoming for each one of those funds. Everything else is generally in line with what I expected for the month.
All right. Any other questions or comments on the monthly budget report?
All right. Nope.
Informational for us. All right. Next item, 2019-55. Treasurer's report for September 2019.
Beginning fund balance of $13,124,377. Year-to-date revenues of $15,793,729. Year-to-date expenses of $10,921,680. For projected ending fund balance of $17,996,426.
Any questions or comments on that one? Or remind us to council.
Yes, and we can do that one on Tuesday, Rob.
Yep.
Okay. That one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll take that to council. Continuing on, admin 2019-56, cash statement for August 2019.
Just informational as always. Our cash balances are on the first page. Our investment balances are on the second.
Any questions or comments? Okay. It's informational as well. 2019-57 monthly website report for September 2019.
So our website traffic has peaked like it normally does in August, so we are on the downfall, and that goes with our festival season and events and other things that we have going on throughout the city. So you see that our total visits in September was 17 compared to 27, and that is basically for the Hometown Days traffic that we draw to our website from all of our social media posts. Hometown Days was the top download in September, and then our social media statistics, we do have a record highest viewed post, and that was the Mill Road Repaving Project. That was the post reach was 21,078. That was the most reach that we've ever gotten on a single post before. So we will begin to track police as well. They have a new Facebook page in the coming months, so we will get that added to this report in future months.
So on the Mill Road post, are we going to have a report of percentage of negative percentage of
positive? No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
A great debate. It's fixed, but we don't like it. All right. Any comments on that one? All right. Continuing on. 2019-58, meeting schedule for 2020. In the packet, anybody have any issues with the dates we have? Same time, same day? All right.
Be approved by committee.
Approved by committee. So if no one has any objections, looks good to me. All right. Continuing on. 2019-59, annual treasurer's report.
So it's that time of year again. Here's the annual treasurer's report for the fiscal year ended April 30th, 2019. It starts on the first page as a summary statement of operations for major funds and then the major fund type categories. Right underneath that is a link to the FY19 CAFR, which we talked about last week. Then after that, you have all the different receipts or revenues for all the various city funds. There you go to payroll, and everybody's broken down into $25,000 buckets. And then finally on page 3 begins our vendor disbursements, over 2,500, so the solid vendors that we paid throughout fiscal year 19. And this will be hopefully be presented before council next week and then published in the Kendall County Record by the end of the month.
Anybody have any questions or comments on that one? All right. If not, we'll move that forward to council.
Next meeting, 22nd.
Okay. 2019-60, the tax levy estimate.
Okay, Rob's got a nice long memo in the packet. The short version is on page 4. I shouldn't make fun of the memo because I think mine was longer before. So, and I think he's using the same format from 3 years ago, so it's my fault, really. The last page of the memo, so it's page 4, it's got a nice gray and black city tax levy, library tax chart. And so tax levies for cities, you know, everybody looks at the rate, how much you're paying, but as a reminder, we levy a dollar amount. So last year we asked for $3.2 million, and we're only allowed to ask for an inflationary factor, which this year I believe is 2.1. Is that right, Rob?
I think it's 1.9.
1.9. And it was 1.9% above what we levied for last year. And a new construction amount. So this year, our new construction in the city ends up being... where is that at?
$96,055.
What's the actual EAV dollar amount?
Oh, for new construction?
Yeah.
$15.8 million.
Okay. So $15.8 million in new property value in the city. And so if that property had existed in the city last year, it would have generated about $96,000 in property taxes. So you're allowed to add that on to last year's levy total, plus the inflationary dollar amount. So your chart there, which is $3.499 million on the city tax levy, that's the capped maximum tax levy that we think that we can do this year. And so that would be an increase of, I think, 4 or 5 percentage points above what we did last year. Is that correct, Rob?
4.3.
Thank you. 4 to 5. And if we were asking for the maximum under the tax cap, we would say make your levy amount 3.6 or 3.7 million, assuming that we were only going to do 3.5. In the past several years, we have either decreased the property tax levy because of some awful things that had to happen in 2012 and 2013, related to property taxes, or in the past couple years, we've actually left money on the table by only levying for new construction. So we've kept the inflationary levy increase off the table. So that second column, maximum levy, that's the most that we think we can get, $3.499 million. And our staff recommendation is actually much less than that. It's $3.337 million. So we're actually leaving a little bit of money on the table for this year and in years going forward, because we're only asking for new construction. So what that means is, theoretically, if your property values don't change and everybody else's property values don't change in the city, you should pay generally the same amount of property taxes to the city from 1 year to the next going forward. So if we were to collect inflation and new construction, your property taxes should go up. All that is, you know, a lot of assumptions. Your property value goes way up, you're going to pay more property tax. If it goes way down, theoretically, you should pay less in property taxes. So the staff recommendation is 3.337 for the cities. We've kept that same assumption for the library, which is a separate levy. That's how we've done that in the past. So we apply a limiting rate to them as well. This agenda item is only for purposes of setting the maximum tax levy for purposes of holding a public hearing in November for then the levy ordinance that you'll do at the end of November or December. So really all you're doing is saying $3.337 million in general is what we'd like to set the tax levy estimate at. Let's go do our public hearing, talk about it over the next couple months.
I thought we always did it to max.
We used to. It was okay. Our practice up until 2011.
Oh, so do I ask the same question every year?
Probably. I don't remember. I don't think so. Oh. No. Oh, and the theory being as a non-homeowner municipality is your property tax cap. Whatever you leave on the table from 1 year to the next is lost in perpetuity.
Right.
So,
because I always thought we went for the max and then backed it down from there.
Yeah,
we made that decision that we wanted to try. We knew we weren't going to go for the additional, so we why go for it? We're at least capturing everything we can within the new construction, which is the proposal.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you go to, this is what I want to point out here, Exhibit C. So it's going to be PDF page 88. And it's got a number one and a number two on the bottom of Exhibit C. It's the spreadsheet that looks at all the sub-levies in there. So this is assuming that we only ask for the new construction dollar amount. If you look from the 2018 column, like the 2018 levy extension, over to 2019 levy request, the corporate line item is the same last year to this year. The police protection line item actually goes down $23,000. The police pension line item is going up $119,000. And then everything else is like $192, $38, pretty generally the same. So our police pension levy amount, remember, is recommended by our actuaries and our police pension fund board every year. Okay, so last year to this year, it went up $119,000, which is an increase of 10.7%. So because that went up so much, we're actually losing money in the general fund because we're not levying the highest amount of property taxes possible. So that loss this year to the general fund, because we're kicking more money into the pension, is $23,000. Not a huge dollar amount, but it's, you know, it's a slide. So, you know, we've kind of always said in the past, like, we want to make sure, obviously, that we're paying as much as we can into the police pension or whatever is recommended, and then everything else should generally be zero. So here's an example where it's actually, we're meeting that pension obligation, but we're actually losing money in the general fund. So we talked about it at a staff level, talked about it with the mayor, like, do we want to levy an additional $23,000 so that the general fund isn't hurt? And we thought that it was probably more important to keep the message of your property taxes should be generally the same from year to year because we're trying to hold the line.
Yeah. Any thoughts, any comments?
No, that's fine because, 23 grand ain't a lot, but it'll just be like, they're raising your taxes. Yeah, by a dollar.
It's much easier to convey the message of we're not going for the increase.
Slides big time.
We're going just for the construction. Yeah. Much easier to convey that message.
So, for the purposes of the motion at next week's meeting, if everybody is okay with the staff recommendation, it'll be that $3.337 million in city levy capped. And then if you drop down to the library, the $739,000 in library operations capped, is that actually what the library board had?
Yeah, that's what they came up with on Monday.
Okay. So that is what it is. And then the $827,000 is the referendum taxes for the building. So that's there. So that's $1.566 million for both the library levies. So the motion will basically say $3.337 million for the city, $1.566 million for the library. We go forward, we do our public hearing, there'll be another explanation November 12th, I believe it is. And then you guys get to review it again and vote on the final levy end of November, early December.
Any other discussion on this one? Are we good with the new construction only? All right. With that, we'll move it forward to council. All right.
That one will go next week. As a fair warning, I will, neither Aaron nor I will be at that meeting, but Rob can handle that discussion.
Rob can handle the financial one?
Yes, the tax levy one.
That's good. That's the 15th.
Yep.
Okay. 2019-61, Employee Manual Drug Policy Update.
So in light of the Adult Use Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act that will be effective on January 1st, staff went ahead and proposed some changes to the employee manual. We did actually a complete rewrite of Section 2.7, which is the drug-free workplace policy, and we made it a lot clearer, a lot shorter. Basically, that says, and it gives us as administrators allowing to look at an employee on a case-by-case basis or a situation on a case-by-case basis. So the language has been changed to say those that have a CDL or as a DOT employee still has to abide by all of the DOT regulations that are in place by state and federal law. We have to still require drug testing prior to employment. Or if we have a reasonable suspicion that an employee is using a substance such as alcohol or even cannabis, and it can still be tested that way. We do encourage the city employees to use the EAP system, which is our help system, if they feel that they have a drug or alcohol problem or if we feel that they have a drug or alcohol problem. And that testing employee to evaluate those circumstances will be done once again on a case-by-case basis. So the other language that was inserted is drug statute conviction. So if an employee is convicted of a drug crime, they have 5 days to notify us as the employer that they were convicted on that. And then once again, we will review the case and we'll go forward with them on an employment decision for the future. Other items that have been cleaned up within the policy is that drug testing for return to duty, so if somebody is off for a period of time, or we have a lot of seasonal employees, especially in recreation. So right now our policy states that if you are gone for 30 days or more, that you have to be retested to come back. That gets overly burdensome for staff and, frankly, the employee, too, to go ahead and get tested. So we've changed that from 30 days to 365 days. And then post-accident testing, which is in currently as a $500 damage amount, we propose to, it's actually a $500 for non-DOT and $250 for DOT. We've proposed to increase that to $1,500 for both, which is still a very small dollar amount for what things cost to be fixed on vehicles or property these days.
That's if they're under the influence.
That is if it's required to be tested, if we believe that there's suspicion that they may be under the influence.
We had some issues where somebody would open a door or something, like
scratching
a door, and then they would report it to us. And because it was like $300 worth of damage, we would say,
You have to go get tested.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. And then how much does the testing cost?
Yeah, like $75 or something like that.
And their time.
Right.
Yeah.
The day.
But
right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's easier to go with the $1,500 flat on and just work it. Okay.
That makes sense.
We also had language in the policy reflecting a medical review officer. We do not have that position, so we went ahead and took that out. We did leave the appendices within the document, which is testing that they agree to a drug-free workplace and any reasonable suspicion documentation. That would all remain in there. But really, the guesswork is all taken out of this and just said, hey, come to work sober. You're not going to have a problem here.
How does that testing work if somebody... As of January 1, if it's legal and somebody has uses marijuana or whatever on Friday night,
sure.
comes to work on Monday, How's it, how far does that testing go back?
We don't know at this point, but we do get the results back, and they have the ability to do a detectable amount.
Okay.
So we will look at that, too, and if the lab says, wow, you know, this is really high right now, and I'm not sure why it's that high amount. But once again, if they're, it's a pre-employment, it would be. Otherwise, it would be only if there was reasonable suspicion or an accident.
Gotcha. It's going to... documentation, observation, staff training, that type of a thing. So, I mean, the tests, they do show that, but they're not that good yet where you
can
pinpoint it. And so that'll be subject to, I'm guessing, personnel litigation, you know, all over the state at some point or another. So just depending on what your action is. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody has a good explanation and they don't look high.
Why would we send them?
You know, you may be more likely to not do something at that point than you would be if somebody's... seeing things that aren't there.
The decision to test is left with the department heads?
Yes, in general.
And reasonable suspicion can be reported by anyone.
Correct.
Is that defined, reasonable suspicion?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And we train for it every
two years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it's reported by an employee, it's documented, even if a department head chooses not to follow through, would it be documented that
I mean, it depends on the case. If somebody puts in the email,
then it's forever documented.
Yeah.
Right. But it doesn't go in a formal
permanent record
file, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's something that's reported, you don't. I mean, you don't want it to be something that is negatively influencing things. But if somebody chooses to continuously not follow through with the testing of some sort that's being reported, you know, maybe there's an issue there. So I don't know if there's a way to work that. Is there any issue? I know with like projects that we work on, if we have any federal funding, if we are part of a subcontract to anybody with federal funding, if there's a random audit and there's drug testing, the entire project can be blown if anybody within the entire project
tests
positive.
None of you guys can.
What's that?
None of us can.
And that's it. So even if it's legal, if they're federal dollars, we lose the entirety of the project potentially. Do we stand to potentially have loss of funding if anybody comes back positive on something like that?
No.
At the municipal level, we'd be exempt on something like that?
So in our current contracts, we do have drug-free workplace that company has to abide by. It'd be up to the company to make us good.
I'm thinking, like our unemployees, you know, we receive federal dollars for grants and different things if we have somebody on a project or if something.
Oh, we're still a drug-free workplace.
Right? We are.
Currently.
But does it have potential to affect the monies we're given from the feds?
I mean, maybe like in an abstract way, you know, if something really bad happens.
It'd be the same as alcohol, though, right?
It would be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm just
concerned
about that.
Yeah.
I imagine the directive would come from the federal government that if you don't get rid of this particular person who's tested positive three times, we're pulling the plug and
your funds
are gone.
As long as they went through the EEP and...
They don't care if it's first offense or whatnot.
Yeah, I know that that's a little bit of a concern to people if you have a lot of federal grants. I mean, we haven't gotten one in several years.
The money's out there.
I guess that they... given any more or less grants to Colorado,
right?
Federally, would be where you'd look to see if it influences or not.
But you're having a zero tolerance too on employees. Who knows?
The bigger risk is more in the public safety field. There are conflicting viewpoints among police unions, management staff, labor lawyers, etc. On one, not whether you want to. Whether you can prohibit off-duty use completely for officers, because the risk is there under the different like police shooting state acts, like officers can be held personally liable if they have trace amounts of drugs in their system, and so that hasn't been amended by the different laws, and so there's some concern that even if somebody uses 29 days ago or whatever, and it, you know, the test comes up within 30, that there might be some exposure there for people that if something bad happens that, you know, it pulls up on a test.
I assume that they're going to be saying, no, you can't, because they did it with all your labor unions. None of us can.
Yeah, I'd be more comfortable if it's zero tolerance, period. you know, granted it's recreational, it's legalized, but we have the right to create and restrict. Now you get into some of the issues.
We're talking about selling it too.
Right.
But we're not selling it. It'd be a vendor.
Okay.
But
we're willing to take the tax money, but just
but yeah, I think zero tolerance cleans it up a lot more concisely. But yeah, you get into some of the issues of
So I imagine see what happens in the next union contract and really how the kind of the case law and you know the labor law fleshes out. Mm-hmm.
And there may be changes in the next coming session.
Yeah.
Too.
Because that would be the unions. We have to work that out with them, but. Non-union employees, we could do zero tolerance as well. And then we have in the policy for random drug screening if we chose. So if we ever wanted to.
You only have random drugs.
Oh, that's only in
correct.
The union,
yeah, you
right?
You can't do random of regular people.
And that's on only the contract.
The prevailing thought on non-union people seems to be the intent of the law was that, similar to alcohol, it's like, well, I mean, it's like you can't fire somebody or discipline somebody if it doesn't affect their work performance.
Yeah.
There's like a loose argument that you can make that says, like, if you're always on call, you never should be, like, drunk or never should partake. But, you know, like, that's loose. It's not in the law that says, oh, hey, you can fire somebody because they, you know, smoked a bunch of weed, you know, on a Friday night and came to work on Monday.
You know, office staff have different rules. I mean, you have an officer sees something happen, they have an actual obligation by their code or the law that they have to do, you know, respond in certain ways. So we can't, I can see where we wouldn't be able to apply the same rules to non-union.
I always explain it that it's very similar to alcohol. You're not going to show up to work drunk. Why would you show up to work high?
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, and if you do, then you get disciplined. So that's exactly what our policy states. It continues to state that in just a very simple manner.
We think the 360, going back to the time, 365 days, the full year, because I think it was explained, we have some, you know, specialty class teachers that they're in, then
seasonal
40 days later they're doing something, they
have
to test it again.
Plow drivers.
Yeah, it's mostly for our
plow drivers.
They're all
union. Oh, right.
Yeah. They're all full time.
Yeah, this is really recreational staff.
It's the guys that are in, you know, summertime
crossing guards.
Those
are
probably
more
tested a little more than the guy at the art class.
They're mowing the lawn at the baseball field.
Right. If somebody mows it a little crooked.
Yeah, it seems like a long time through a full year, but I guess I get it.
Right.
So.
And they fall under DOT anyways.
Anything else on these ones? Fun we're having with drugs.
If it's okay with you, we'll put this on the November 12th.
November 12th? Okay. Alright, move that to November 12th. Next one, 2019-62 IT expenditures.
All right, we've got a package of them. The easiest one is the one. It effectuates everything
clearly
that we've gotten the other two. Okay. The server licenses are probably the second easiest. So these are one-time purchases required. Should have been actually bought like
with
a year and a half ago when we bought our servers. Our IT vendor at the time didn't catch it. So, yeah. So I guess we've had an interest-free loan for a year and a half. On the server licenses. So he's made the recommendation. The good news is that these will allow us some ability to upgrade some of our older servers to existing software, and then it gives us some ability to upgrade after the fact in 2022, whenever Windows 2022 comes out. So that one is the easier of the two. We don't really have a choice.
So for the licenses, we have to do them.
Yes.
We basically went without paying for that year. We're not doing like a 5-year license and being
correct.
Missing one. We're just moving forward with it, and we got one free.
Correct.
Basically.
Yeah. We will do like a, I think it's called software assurance package or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's like $11,000 a year. So
yeah.
But we can do that through our normal IT budget. So the budget amendment only includes the licenses themselves.
But we have additional cost of the $11,275. So it's the we have the licenses, but
yep.
We also have an ongoing
Yes.
Which is not included in the amendment.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the computer purchases. So the materials in the packet were estimates.
Okay.
We got our quotes back after the packet was published. The quotes on the desktops were marginally higher than our estimates, and the quotes on the laptops, both because we spec'd out two different models and because prices were just higher, were much higher. So it's another increase of about $8,000 on top of what's in your packet, so that's what they're going to get passed out ahead of time. So the best way to explain this is probably through the budget amendment. If you look at the different yellow highlighted rows that Rob has throughout, in aggregate, I mean, you're looking at an increase in the budget of, like we said, $40,000.
It's actually $60,000.
Okay.
With the new pricing.
Okay, so $60,000. But it's split between the water fund, the sewer fund. Some of it's going to go into the public works capital fund, or like the citywide capital fund, and then the different operational departments. So I think the worst department citywide is the police department, and that ended up being about $10,000 or $12,000 off the top of my head, higher than what was budgeted. So we wrestled with it because, you know, like an admin, you're looking at an increase of $2,000, which is not a huge deal. That stuff like that happens all the time. We can cut something else, you know, and not even do a budget amendment. But what's going to happen is because we're ordering so many computers, because we're compressing our timeline, that, I mean, we're going to be ordering them in packs of 15,000, 20,000, 25,000, just depending on how fast they can roll them out. And so I didn't want there to be a situation where you guys said, like, oh, God, you know, you've spent $60,000 on computers citywide that you didn't think so, and that's not okay. So we packaged everything in a budget amendment just to be the most transparent. The conversation I had with the mayor was basically like each one of these departments needs to come up with a plan to be able to offset whatever that increase is. And I said, that's fine. I said, I haven't done that yet because we wanted to make sure that we got this out as soon as possible, given the Windows 7 end of life issues in mid-January. We've got like 20 or so computers that need to do that. But I would anticipate that we will have that available by the November 12th City Council meeting. So, you know, it'll say, you know, somebody didn't go to IML, so we saved $2,000 or whatever, you know, in the admin department. Finance did this and that. That way you guys have some idea. So the recommendation still would be to do the budget amendment. Ultimately, if you said, no, we're not going to do the budget amendment, we'd rather you just implement these cuts at the management level, that's fine too. But I figured you'd want to see that, you know, before you sign off on one of the other two options.
Just one general question, first off. So our IT company, are they the ones recommending 3 years versus 4 to 5 for the replacement, the life cycle replacement?
No. City staff and our IT consortium are recommending.
And that's who I'm getting, the consortium.
So the consortium of the six other municipalities generally recommends 3 years for laptops and 4 years for computers.
Right.
I mean, we have gone 6 and 7 years with computers at some time, and it creates issues. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen it citywide that people are starting to get a little fed up with it in the organization. And we've just seen the data, you know, flush out. Computers are dying, and then what happens is somebody's without a computer for a week and a half.
Until it's built and in place. And,
yeah.
Right.
It's just a pain in the butt.
The only reason I ask is, you know, 3 years seems awfully short. Are we doing budget computers? Is that part of the issue? Or are we going to higher power business platform computers that are going to put up with more?
They generally are the more business computers. The desktops at $1,000 a piece in general
that's kind of mid-low, I would think.
They're mid-level business computers, but they're desktops, so they don't include monitors, so it's $1,000 just for
just
the tower, basically.
Yeah.
Then the laptops are mid-tier to high-end, so some of the more expensive ones are the ones that are supposed to be running GIS applications, some of our power
so
users.
So we're looking between $3,000 to $5,000 a piece easily?
No, they're less than $2,000, so.
Seems low.
They've been
It seems low to do GIS and those kind of applications. If you're going to do laptop, that's
so they're different than a home computer in that none of the Windows licensing or any of the other software packages are included within it.
Right.
That's usually a few hundred dollars on top of whatever that price is too.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
there's less consumer facing software on it, which can inflate the
payment. Yeah, the business. If you're going business, it's not going to have the bloatware on it, which is great. But, okay, I don't want us to, change our system, go, 3 years, but just to do it on budget computers, that doesn't make sense. As long as they are good business computers that are going to do what we need them to do all across the city, that's good. So we're not seeing those specs, we're just seeing them.
Yeah, it's the same models and specs that Glenview, Lake Bluff, Lincolnshire, Kenilworth, Buffalo Grove, Oswego have all been using. So.
Okay, as long as they get the job done.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. And so...
When you've seen the long life with the computers, are you noticing your IT charges for repairs and updates are higher too? So,
not from a like an invoice perspective, but downtime. It's just you go into somebody's office and they're like, "Yeah, I'll get that to you in an hour or whatever." My computer stopped cycling, or I had to shut it down 3 times this morning. So
it takes you 5 times longer to do a simple task.
It's crazy.
Before
mine was replaced, I mean, mine would boot up okay. There's other people who have computers that don't boot up okay. But then it would just, you'd open up Microsoft Outlook and it would take 20 minutes or whatever to, cache everything in order to get it running. So
it's like this thing. I mean, this is 2 years old, maybe 3 years old now, but it boots instantly and it runs well. But this, it's definitely a higher-end business one. But... it's not the kind that is not rugged enough to have people doing a lot with it. So, just want to make sure we're getting some. That's good. All right. So this one, obviously multiple parts. We're going to move the budget amendments.
Costco, $4.99. 5 years old.
Sounds like a dream.
Not really, not anymore.
Depends on what you're running at.
Yeah,
we would take the budget amendment and the authorization for the licenses to the 11-12 City Council meeting. The computer purchases kind of package with the budget amendment, just to give you an idea of what we're doing. So.
Budget amendment and licenses.
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to move those two items out. That's got the three on here, but if you have purchases. Okay. Anybody have any issues with that or any other questions?
Negative.
Okay. We will move that out to City Council. And then next item, 2019-63 Liquor Code Regulations, Number of Available Licenses.
So Lisa's got a nice memo in here. Chris had brought up the idea of getting into a practice of reverting the license numbers for, it's our A licenses. So it's the tavern licenses. So A1, A2, A3, A4. Which are, in general, unlimited amounts and percentages of alcohol for a licensee. So everything else that's restaurant and then on down either has like a space restriction, like a golf club. I think it's a golf club license. It has to be attached to a golf course. Restaurant licenses require at least 50% of your sales to come from food and not alcohol. So those are uncapped because we don't mind restaurants. But bars and taverns, generally, people have had issues with over, decades, and so they cap the number of licenses. So in theory, a lot of places will cap them so that when somebody leaves, you ratchet down the license number, then you have control over who applies next. In practice, it's only come up a few times in the past 8 years, so the prior mayoral administration. But in general, we would just kind of say, no, leave it alone, leave it as is. And that way, when somebody comes to us the next time, their turnaround on the application is a little quicker. So there's two things you can do. One, that different towns do. One is somebody leaves. You just throw an ordinance on the next agenda. And, for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever your lag time is between when somebody hands the notice that they're leaving and the next city council meeting, technically, you've got an available license until then, and then you ratchet it down. There are some towns like Oswego, which actually put the language into the code that says, no, it automatically goes down the minute somebody turns in a license or doesn't pay. And so then we've got a little bit more legal weight with being able to tell somebody, no, we don't have an available license. You have to go to city council to ask for one. The towns that do that, with the automatic reverter, will still do belt and suspenders. at the next meeting, they still pass an ordinance that reverts it down. It just gives them a little bit of additional safety there. So that's the concept. The one thing that I talked to the mayor about is in the case of, like, Roadhouse. So, I mean, they were in limbo for a long time. So anytime you switch out a owner, so you make a new LLC or you actually sell to somebody, you have to get a new liquor license. So sometimes that can be a little bit of a process, more from the legal end, not from our end. And so just depending on what your business arrangements are, there might be some issues being able to operate, you know, for a few weeks in a row. So with Roadhouse, again, they closed down. They were in limbo for a while. And then they had a new owner and they wanted to open up right away. Because we held their license open for them and didn't ratchet it down, that process could have been done immediately and was, subject to background checks, of course. Whereas if we had the city council ordinance to, then they would have to go in front of the board, and that would add, you know, probably 2 to 4 weeks of turnaround time. So, I mean, the mayor didn't say one way or another which way he wanted to go, but he was just like, I can see both sides of it, so wanted to have the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it hasn't been an issue, but there has been discussion in the past about how many licenses and how, you know, it's understood that the mayor, the liquor commissioner, is the one that authorizes those. But it was brought up to me about, you know, can we look at reducing them? I do like the idea, you know, like what Oswego has where it automatically reverts, that the language is in the ordinance, but then you follow it. But I would think if we could work it out legally for a title change, you know, ownership title change, you know, as long as they're not closing, if they're just changing title or entity, that's exempt. You know, so if you're going XYZ LLC to ABC LLC, if it's a title change,
same business, different owners.
Yeah, we shouldn't take that one away. I mean, don't put them in limbo if they're just changing hands. I think that's the type of thing. But now, obviously, Roadhouse, the operations closed, they ceased. In that case, yeah, take it back. But it's just one of those, so that way it automatically goes, but then it automatically comes up to the city council, the mayor's report for, you know, reestablishing the license as soon as we get the application. That's kind of the thought. It's just to kind of monitor and watch that, because I know that question of how many licenses are out there has come up in the past. And it's been not just A1, the A1 tavern license, but it's been on some of the others. I know we don't have those restricted for quantity. It's just this one, so this is the only one, unless we want to add caps on those, but I don't think so.
So what if somebody opens, they extend on to their current facility, would they have to get enough reapply for a new one? Depending on,
like, if Rosati's blew out a wall, yeah, and added another, no, that would all be covered under
the existing one.
Okay. Yeah, you might have to amend the address or whatever. But yeah.
So really what you're saying is better turnaround time for somebody that's going to be put in that situation. So if it changes hands, if I buy your company, mm-hmm, I want that quick turnover. I don't want to wait 4 weeks.
You're keeping it open.
Yeah.
The intent is to keep the business open.
Right.
You're not going to...
You'd have to shut it down for 2 to 4 weeks to get the liquor license. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so you want
if you ration it back.
So if you ration it.
Yeah, so I don't think that there would ever be an issue under any language with somebody was just selling to somebody else.
Yeah.
They're going to operate up until the day of the closing.
And we would make sure that
the person is going to operate. Like, you can do all that ahead of time. Without having, because that's like instantaneous.
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
You turn in your paperwork, and then the next person turns it in. You know, we've already...
It would be the issue of, I'm selling it, and, you know, my license is coming. Say it comes up, they're doing it right at the time of the expiration.
Yeah.
Well, it comes up, and then all of a sudden, well, their license is no longer good, and now it's you got a lag of 2 to 4 weeks.
Right.
How
you
much
don't want
is,
to have that. You
how much is a typical liquor license?
About $1,500.
Yeah. Yeah, then you run the risk of somebody saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to close. What happens if it doesn't close and they're all $1,500?
Well, I'm guessing you wouldn't even purchase a license until you have a closing, so you can actually...
Well,
right.
The change of title...
You have closing
the fee itself is refundable. It's
okay.
The application. There's like an application fee of a couple hundred bucks. It's not.
And the new person would still pay that fee. So even if it's a change in ownership,
they're
still
paying
the
fee on it. They're not getting out of that.
Correct.
It's just, you know, so even if they do a title change, it's literally just paperwork. business continues, nobody sees any difference. They still pay that fee.
So, what is our concern, like, when it was closed down, that somebody was going to build a bar and then take that license because it was technically open?
Well, that's the issue that's come up in the past, is that license is available, that license can be used anywhere then. And that's what's...
Well, yeah.
Right.
In theory.
But they still have to go through the process of applying for it and getting approval for it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just not... You can't just come in and say, I'm taking it now and I'm going
to
open
a
bar
in
my basement.
Well, you do have to, but the concern was that one... So somebody comes in all of a sudden, like Roadhouse. Roadhouse is closed. Somebody comes in, they open a new restaurant.
You have all these new restaurants coming up, so I could see where somebody might think, well, geez, how many are left? Because if Parma opened up and you have Flight, and then you've got the new Casa higher-end Mexican restaurant, and then whatever else comes up, I guess I could see that.
It's probably your biggest risk is gaming cafes, which all fall under our A1 licenses.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't really serve food, they can never make it, so you know they all get tavern licenses.
Yeah.
So I know that one of the, I forget which license had closed, and then BP came in.
And they picked it up.
And the mayor at the time said, yes, that's fine.
Yep.
And I know that not everybody was okay with that at the time, but it is what it is. Now they're the only gas station in town that has it. So people generally are.
That's the perfect situation of what it was, is the license, they close, somebody else comes in, and then now, if that business wanted to open up or someone open in that new space, well... they're requiring another license.
Yeah.
And then,
so you're trying to protect somebody from, like, BP from taking the license.
Monopolizing it. Yes.
But why?
Well, they would have just, they'd have to use the license.
The rest of the service stations in town could technically apply for
it. If there is one. But if there's no license available, they have to come and ask for another license to be added. That's the...
Well, okay.
That's the process. Yeah. The council has the control on... how many? What are we setting in?
So
and it gives us the ability. So, you know, say we, for instance, have three businesses that close. Not good for the economy. But if we have three, well, then there's three open. Well, if it automatically ratchets it down, okay, well, you go from 10 to 7. Okay, big deal. We're good. If someone wants one, they got to come ask for it. It's plain. It's kind of the issue.
I mean, what have you guys done historically in the past where you've had a situation like that, or maybe there hasn't been one? Have you ever said no? I mean, is that what the concern is? That people are worried about coming to, wasting the time, because it could be 2 to 4 weeks, but then not having one, or the risk of city council saying no?
Well, we have denied adding a license before.
Yeah.
We did. That was OMG. OMG came in, they wanted to change their license, they wanted to do gaming, and it was said, you know, we don't have one, so council said no. If there had been one available, they would have just got it.
Yeah.
No council input on.
Did they request for one since there wasn't one?
Yes.
Yes.
And we still said no.
Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Because they wanted to put in gaming.
Yeah.
That was the whole reason for that license.
But you had to have on-site sales for gaming too, right?
Yes, you do. Which is why they had to get an A1 license.
Right.
And that's where
to
the
be able
control
to sell
factor
package
comes
and,
in a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's one of those that council at the time said, it's not really a great fit right there. But without having control of the numbers, you don't have control of where they go.
Right. They could have just swooped and grabbed one and opened it up. Okay. I understand.
Yeah.
So what are you saying here?
But I guess what are requirements to get an A1 license?
Pass a background check, pay the fee. That's basically it.
Yeah. It's been
an internal review process and stuff, but...
See, I'd say that's more where the hiccup is than versus...
You can't, like, if somebody applies and says that they're going to have really loud outdoor volleyball all the time next to a residential area, say, we don't want that just because of that, you would have to, like, you know, say, well, we're going to restrict your outdoor usage.
So when you're doing the application... It's literally, they have to follow the rules of the application.
Correct.
The council can evaluate other things when we want to determine if we want another license added. We have a greater scope in that aspect.
Mm.
And that's kind of just where it's coming from.
A little bit more control.
Yeah. And it's only the one license that we're talking. Well, you said A1, A4, right? It's the tavern license.
A1, A2, A3, A4, but it's
A1. But it's the tavern. It's the A1. It's the... Right. It's so type of use.
So let me just.
It used to do that? I thought.
Didn't revert.
It didn't revert. We just never had a point where there was really.
It might have reverted back in like the early 2000s, but after I came on board, I don't ever remember us
doing it,
and it. But it might have been a function of not having to do it because nowhere was closing. So
it was opening right. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Things were on the downhill turn, so everybody was consuming more.
Right. Yeah, they were opening faster than anybody could close. And
so the vehicle for this, just so you know, is an ordinance from the city council that says. We're aware that this place is closed. We're decreasing the number of licenses by one. So this is more of a conversation, I think, that the council needs to have with the mayor. One, on like the different roles between liquor commissioner and then your legislative authority. And then two, you know, there isn't a code amendment that's needed to effectuate that policy. Like all eight of you could decide all of a sudden, like, we're just going to do this. And when we hear of one that's closing, like, we're going to put another city council report at the next meeting and revert it by one. So, and then that gets into the political process.
But that has, without it being on the books within the ordinance, that requires communication. Well, I'm not saying that there's not good communication, but if the license goes away and it's not communicated.
Yeah, there's no requirement for us, I think, reported at city council or anything. And that'd be pick up there. That's another. Yeah.
I'm not saying that there's poor communication, but that's just a function of making sure that communication. If it's an ordinance, then okay, we would have a vehicle to make that happen.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm not looking for action or anything tonight, but I think it's a good discussion. So, I think this comes back next month. We have some more communication with the mayor, liquor commissioner.
Good.
And bring it back for further discussion next month. Okay.
We'll bring that back. Moving on. Old business 2019-35 facilities master plan RFQ.
We do have a scheduled meeting between the mayor and one of the facility plan proposers the first week of November, so it's 2 weeks out. But we have goal setting on Saturday. This is the number two city council goal last year. So, I mean, we didn't have an action plan from last year to this year because we had one the year prior that said we're going to do one. So I guess my suggestion would be to have that conversation among the nine elected officials and see how we move forward and what priority it is for everybody as a group. So.
Okay.
And bring it back next month for another discussion.
Month six. All right, so we'll bring it back. Hopefully the conversation is good on Saturday. So, back to committee. Next item, 2019-45 website redesign update.
So you have the design concept review in front of you in the packet. There has been several changes since we put this in the packet. We have a staff stakeholder group, and then we also take your comments back. So the banner wording, Yorkville, Illinois, that has been changed. The font is larger and bolder, and then the font stays the same throughout the entire homepage. The graphic buttons have been changed as well, and the spelling errors have all been fixed.
The graphic buttons from below?
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of the
page. Correct, yes. And then also the interior navigation bar, which is blue on this, shows as maroon on the updated one. The logo at the top is also larger. And then we have a Facebook live feed also on the page. It's on the main page on the bottom in between the photo on the left and the upcoming events calendar on the right. So it's not on this, but all of these changes have been suggested and incorporated into the most recent design.
So it'll be a logo button link that will take you to the Facebook
it's
Live?
It's actually just the image of our current Facebook that continually gets refreshed.
Oh.
So anything you want to click on, comment on, you can do directly from our webpage. Yeah.
Anyone have some comments or thoughts? What comment I have, you know, we have the Yorkville, Illinois, and then we have the tags below it.
Mm-hmm.
looking through Civic Plus's the websites they have on their award-winning page, mm-hmm. you know, so some of their key pages, they have a lot of icons, a lot of, you know, graphical points.
Mm-hmm.
I still think our website is very wordy. I'd like to see a little more graphics, like icons for those kind of things. I think we could do that just to kind of bring it up to being a little better looking with a little less text.
What are you saying underneath the word Yorkville where it says government?
Where you did like those five right there, do the icon, maybe it's got the little text below it, but just try to give it more, a little more graphic sense. You know, it's not all text.
That's more expensive too, isn't it?
What's that?
Is that more expensive?
No.
I'm not sure.
Should it be?
So.
I mean, you look at it, there are a lot of them that are going that way. They're trying to incorporate more, you know, visual click on icon.
The one I really liked, it was from Yorba Linda, California.
Yeah,
it
that's
was,
uh-huh.
It was all images, but our staff really had concerns because they take the phone calls and they walk people through, and it's mostly people that are
older,
and so they were going to have a hard time, they thought, learning that type of environment.
So I think there's a hybrid, mm-hmm. you know, instead of going all icons,
yep.
but I think there's a there'd be a good mix.
Sure.
I like having the icons on the bottom of the page.
Yep. And those will actually be, because you can't, because this isn't a live page,
mm-hmm.
those icons are actually going to be floating underneath government services, community business, how do I, and then you'll see the search bar, and then they will flow with the page, so they won't ever go away.
Okay, because I just think our website right now and what I'm seeing here still has a lot of text. With text is not bad, but there's just a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to simplify. And I know our color palette is ADA,
mm-hmm.
so I know it has the
darker hue
to it,
hues,
but it's
purple
very,
hues.
Very, very dark
mm-hmm.
overall. And no offense to the ADA, I think mm-hmm. kind of it gives a very dark image of Yorkville overall. I'm sorry, it's just
mm-hmm.
way too dark.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
But otherwise, I think it's content-wise, it's good. Will we have the ability to see a mobile version?
Yes, it's mobile friendly, so what you see is what you get. It will be exactly the same.
It's going to be exactly the same. It's not going to convert to a more...
Yep.
Okay.
The headings underneath Yorkville,
yeah.
if you click on government, is it like Yorba Linda's where it highlights everything? Because
mm-hmm.
it looks like the one is.
Yep.
I like that part.
You got it.
As long as it doesn't get hidden.
Correct. And it's
that's
just
so
hard.
Annoying when you're in somebody's website and it has the floating bottom part, but you can't click on what you want because it floats down and it's all twisted.
Yeah. No, it will
oh,
stay.
I hate that.
Yes. And it's so hard to show. And even the font size looks very small on this. It is not that way on a live page. And the search button also stays static with the page as you scroll. As we point more and more people to the search function.
What's
type
good?
In. Rather than click here, then click here, click here. We just say type in brush pickup. Click on the first link.
You've eliminated a section for citizen complaints, right? That's gone.
Well, there aren't any complaints. Right.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Right.
It's the vibe.
The report of concern is still a icon.
And complaints can be made in person.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments on that?
I think it looks really good. The only, if I had to really nitpick something,
please,
I would like to see the word Yorkville in the font of like what the baseball hats or whatever say. Like the, you know, the Y is kind of the fancier Y. I think that's like indicative of Yorkville.
Yeah.
In my opinion, right?
Nice.
Like your shirt that you wear, that cool shirt that says...
Oh, with the fox and stuff on it?
I'm Alderman.
It's got the serifs on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I thought that was cool. This is kind of clean and sleek. I get it. It looks good. But if I had to do one really nitpick complaint, that's what I would say.
You cannot repaint the water tower with that best. He's going to do that one next.
Oh.
Right.
But no, that looks nice. It's clean. Nice work.
Thank you.
All right.
So So I will take the comments back to Civic Plus. We do have to submit our final approval before our next meeting, and then it will go live on December 17th, so you won't see it again at this meeting. Everybody's okay with that? Then we'll continue on our time frame.
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the WYSIWYG website being the same on the mobile seems a bit much. Yeah, because I know you see some of them that they have a desktop format, but then they have a separate format.
You click on desktop or mobile.
It's a more simplified, you know, because like you're on the phone with the full web page.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know it compresses it to a column, but it's still the same format. There are others where it's more simplistic on the web. So as long as it works... I just know our website is difficult as it is right now, so I just want it to be easier.
Some of the mobile versions don't get... It's harder. If you use the desktop and you get on the mobile, then you can't find things easily.
Yeah.
So then I end up clicking on desktop version anyway.
So then you can get to it, yeah.
Yeah. And as long as...
I have that option to go back.
So if you go to Cody, Wyoming, it'll be almost exactly the same as ours. So there'll be more toggles back and forth, but it will be just how it shows.
Basically brings it down narrower so that it's... Okay.
It's the same as what we have, like, if you look at ours right now.
Similar. I would say the Cody one is much cleaner.
It's much easier to navigate.
Yeah, like, if you've got options to go, you can swipe between options. Ours is basically, tab-based and pulls it that way, which currently... Anything is going to be better than what we have right now, because it'll hopefully make it a little more simple.
And then we will be due for another refresh within the year because we were late on this one. So we always have the ability within our current contract to refresh again in a year.
Nice.
But that's a general refresher. It's not as extensive.
Nope, it'll be the exact
same thing.
It's built into our contract for free.
Frequent wardrobe changes.
Do you have that on the calendar of like when you want to look at it? Nice.
I do, yes.
So we won't be behind on schedule that time.
Yeah.
As soon as we're done with this, it goes live. We're going to start planning the next one.
Right.
All right, so we're not going to see this one again.
No.
This goes...
It'll just be live on December 17th.
December
17th.
Just in time for Christmas.
You got it.
Better be some Christmas lights on the top.
They were hesitant to do it at Christmas, but why not?
Yeah.
Right. They
are Christmas lights for me, okay?
Yeah, me too.
You can have your holiday lights. I don't know what for. All right, that's information, all right? Any additional business? Hearing none, we'll adjourn at 7:04.
White goods pickup.